I'd like to call to order the Community Services Committee meeting for Monday, March the 9th. Would you please call roll there?
Capusta?
Here.
Tracus?
Present.
Walchanowicz?
Here.
Okay. The first item as stated on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from the December 11th meeting. We've actually changed our formatting at the council meetings, and we now approve those at the city council meetings. So these minutes were actually approved at the most recent meeting in February. So we will go on to the second agenda item, which is the drug prevention programming. And we have Angie with us here today to give us an update.
Thank you. I just prepared just a few brief bullet items to review. The first thing that I'd like to talk about is the Drug-Free Clubs of America. The high school is currently up to 200 members. And just remember, this is a voluntary program, so the students sign up. This is not mandatory. And that means that over 61% of the students in the high school are members.
That's great.
Yeah. So the program is going strong, and just to keep in mind that they're always looking for incentives. And anybody from the community can contribute to that. And I put just a couple of ideas on, you know, what the most coveted items are. They like gift cards to restaurants like Chipotle or Chick-fil-A, that kind of thing. And anybody in the community is, you know, able to donate if they want to support that program. I did put campus life on the agenda.
May I just ask one question?
Oh, sure.
This was the second year?
Yes. Yep, this is the second year.
Thank you.
Campus life advisory team met in February just to kind of... Just to, you know, discuss the, you know, activity and the goals.
You could join us if you'd like.
Mayor should be...
Oh, okay. We didn't know.
That's what I thought, too. I didn't want to sit there either. So one of the new additions is that they have assigned a second staff person to Independence. And this has enabled them to increase the number of students that they serve and also to have more consistency and constant programming. We consider that, I consider that to be a drug prevention initiative because I think the most important thing with students is to build relationships. And this organization is, does that very nicely, and it's in fact one of their main goals. One of the ways that we are actually trying to partner with the Civic Center, the Community Services Center, is through our senior citizen population. So we brainstormed some ideas on how to get the students more involved with the seniors. And some of those included, there's a craft club now that's taking place at the middle school. And they are talking about having the kids make cards or some kind of craft to include in the meals on, you know, for the Meals on Wheels delivery. There are many more things that we discussed at that meeting as far as maybe bringing the senior citizens in. I think one of the girls will probably go and speak at a senior luncheon. They'd also like to increase the number of adult volunteers, and that might be, you know, one way for our seniors to get involved in that program.
Weren't you talking about those types of things, Mayor, a couple months ago, about those types of opportunities for kids and seniors to interact?
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunities, especially if we have the right facilities. But that's for another conversation. But absolutely, that's the concept that Angie has articulated is interaction, multi-generational interaction, as well as dealing with some of our challenges at various age levels. So whatever role the community can play to advance the socialization process beyond what the school formally does, I think everybody in this room, a good example was yesterday, what everybody did to make that event. And the kids, and maybe I'm going off the reservation, but that's what we do. That's what this team does, because you allocate the funds and the opportunity. So, sorry.
That's okay. This might be a good time to just skip around the, you know, my memo a little bit, because it kind of coincides with the 25 and Live planning that we're doing. We are considering a rebrand for 25 and Alive, and it's just right now in its infancy stages. And one of them could include a name change, which, again, it's just in its infancy, and we're just talking about it. But traditionally, 25 and Alive has been geared towards students, families. I mean, we've involved the whole community, I think, very nicely. But now is a time for us to kind of take a look at it and say, you know, how can we bring in the whole community to be participants and to be engaged in the organization? So that is definitely on our agenda for planning in the upcoming year. The last thing that I had to talk about was the McKeon Education Group. You can see from the memo that Alexa's current caseload is 45 students and families. That means that she had, I believe, 18 new referrals from this year and 27 continuing from last year. And Alexa also continues her work in our after-school program. One of the things that we decided, rather than having programming for the students, she consults with the staff, which has been invaluable as far as bridging the gap between the schools and the after-school program, who see the same type of students. And I think they're very, very happy with her work there.
I'd like to make a comment just about Alexa. As today I had two, just to show you, two incidents with young children that I talked to the parents because we're having issues with them in one of our programs, and both of them said they would probably consider using Alexa because they're having issues inside the home with the children. So, you know, I suggested maybe we could help you there because it's been an ongoing issue. So even on something like that, you know, parents, it's a free service. I said you might want to consider it. And both of them said they're going to think about it because the one especially said she could use that help.
The advantage, too, is not only that it's available because the families could obviously go on their own and get it, but the collaborative nature of it. Yes, there has to be confidentiality between everything is going to be revealed, but when the counselor can get input from the staff, from the school system, and then coordinate all that, the outcome is going to be far more appropriate. So.
Absolutely. One of the last things I wanted to discuss, it's not on the agenda, but we are going to be participating in an Indy Family First Night again that's taking place on March 19th. I brought some flyers for you. On this night, after 5 p.m., the teachers and the coaches have agreed that there's no homework, no homework, no tests to study for, no sporting events, and it's going to give the community an opportunity to spend time together as a family. There's some incentives that were offered, discounts at local restaurants. I know the library has some programs that they're offering as well, but just something that we're doing to, you know, help promote some family time.
Where?
It's the restaurants that are participating.
You know where you can do this.
Well,
everywhere.
It's nowhere. It's just a hiatus from homework and tests and sporting practices where families used to be able to sit down to dinner every single night. With everything going on, they don't have time to do that. So.
Oh, I thought you were going to do it here. What the heck?
We could probably plan something, but.
It's just a nice way
after we get a new kitchen.
Families to be together.
Right, yes. Right.
After we get a new kitchen, then we can do things like that. Here.
New kitchen, did you get?
Oh, and he know. He
yeah,
heard exactly.
I had a visitor yesterday.
So, any questions?
Angie, in terms of the McKeon Education Group, we get an update pretty frequently from Youth for Christ. We don't get an update from McKeon the same way. Is there a possibility that we might have that type of information so that, you know, on a more regular basis, we might know what they're doing within the community and you know, just a little bit like what the Youth for Christ does. So obviously we're impressed with the types of work they're doing, but you know, obviously we hold one program to a standard, and I think it might make sense to have a you know, similar standard in terms of reporting and what are they doing and how they're doing it. And,
do you so how often do you get those updates directly to council? Oh, okay. Okay, how often do you get those?
I think like once a month or so. Don't we?
Yeah, maybe coming monthly. Yeah. Now, okay. Now maybe sometimes quarterly because we talked about.
So I'll read
the
new report
from
the mayor's newsletter, but it's just I didn't put it more to it or not.
Sure, I will definitely.
Yeah, we can definitely
look into that.
Put something together, but you know, obviously, we can tell you what we're doing, how we're doing it. The collaboration, but we have to stop at that point because of the
Yeah.
You know.
Confidential.
But I can tell you, having sat in the meeting with Angie and the school, and there's a tremendous amount of respect for Alexa. And Sandy at the school is, I'm impressed with her willingness to take this to the next level. And so how we formalize that and how we integrate that into our services and how we continue to grow our services and serviceability, it's exciting, but there's going to have to be a few technical changes in order to facilitate that.
We appropriate money for this on an annual basis. Might be a good idea when it comes up for legislation to have someone come and address us. I would almost think it would be preferable to have the actual counselor come rather than the owner of the agency, though.
Okay.
So I think when we had the last presentation, introductory, kind of that's who did it, and I think
yes.
That was appropriate. But now the hands-on person would help
Absolutely.
Us to better understand.
Absolutely.
And I know our team, is very comfortable with hers. And it's been articulated to me that the impact, positive impact we're having on individuals, so young people. So that is really the direction and the trajectory we're headed is exciting because of this people here and the team, as well as the person on at hand that's doing the work. So we'll get that report.
Absolutely.
Quarterly, if it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And is there, like in this report, we have kind of caseload, number of students, and the types of issues. We agreed that we were going to keep it very general just to, you know, for confidentiality purposes. But if you can see the types of issues that she's dealing with, you know, one of them is actually driving one of our choices in 25 and Alive for the upcoming school year. There's a movie called Angst, which is a documentary designed to raise awareness around anxiety, and it's for ages 10 plus. It would be a community-wide presentation. It would be several presentations. There would be one at the school, maybe one at the high school, one for parents, and we're still researching all of that. But again, her work has kind of uncovered that this is probably the number one issue with our students.
Yeah, it's a challenge. It's challenging. But we're blessed to be able to have someone, and then don't minimize the people in this room, because if we didn't have that collaborative communication, and if they want to go and share with you maybe what each of them do, if they're comfortable doing that, I think you'd be enlightened a little bit as to the role each of them play. I'm amazed. So
I think we're very fortunate, Mayor, in this committee, because the directors and their staff who come so well prepared with a very comprehensive, as a matter of fact, I think they do over a work as far as preparing things for us, so we have a good understanding of what they're doing, and that's helpful because then we could support them in issues, matters, legislation, funding, and so
Absolutely.
Forth. So that's great. Anybody have any more questions?
Did you hear the last? Excuse me, but did you hear the last funding? So
No, we do.
Bird just closed his ears.
Andrew, did anybody have any questions?
I have a question. With all the other stuff that they cover in McKinnon. I don't mean we already have programs for it, but to kind of lighten kids on cyberbullying and the whole pedophile coming, you know, going through Instagram and stuff like that, because I've been in talks with the middle school principal about, you know, videos that we can show the kids and stuff. I don't know if there's any type we can add that into there where we can kind of put programs together where kids can come and kind of, we can enlighten them on, you know, yeah, you know, this is what you got to look for when you're on Instagram with your friends or TikTok videos and all that stuff.
I think that would be great, and I think that between our campus life group and the McKeon group, they're trying more and more to coordinate things, and Angie's a great center point for that so that she can bring it back and forth. I would say anything you have, that's just my opinion, Angie, but anything you have would be worth looking at and discussing with
them,
definitely.
There's been some cyberbullying issues at school, and I think if we can work with the principals, not so much primary school because those kids don't have phones yet, but you know, when it gets to middle school, they're starting to see the issues there.
Sure, sure.
With that stuff. So
one of the things that I know that the schools did several months ago was they brought in the Internet Crimes Against Children Unit, and they did a presentation. I attended the evening presentation. And it was a different person that I know of, but that was arranged by the schools. But I will definitely let them know.
Because I shared a video with him that my wife and I sat down and watched with our daughter. And it just, you know, when the kids see these videos at school and their parents aren't there, I don't think they really pay much attention. But when mom and dad are sitting right there, they're going to focus in on this video. So if it's something where, you know, we can put like a, you know, a night once a month where, you know, I mean, obviously we'd have to watch, you know, type of videos we would show the kids. But as long as parents are there, they can sit in with them. The kids kind of take it in a little more than just
I think absolutely, because if the parent isn't in, they may be questioning some of the things that are being presented. And with them being there, they could reinforce with the child and after. So I think that's excellent.
And you bring up a good point. I mean, one of the things that challenges that we face in 25 Y meetings all the time is parent engagement, because there are plenty of times that we've offered these kinds of things and then the parents don't come. So that is, and I had a meeting with Mrs. Saunders at St. Michael's today too, and we discussed the same thing. And it's not only Independence, it's everywhere. Yeah. You know, Brecksville has a similar partnership. You know, they held a very, very important suicide prevention meeting, and a handful of people, a handful of parents showed up. So I think what we're willing to do, we are willing to bring all of those ideas to the community. It's, you know, if the parents, you know, could respond, that would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, you're going to have a dinner and bring the parents to dinner. And
well, right. That's probably true, food.
So when we first started talking about this, Mayor, with McKeon, we said this could be extrapolated out to the community, and there's a need in the community. So be thinking about that as to how we're able to leverage either this program or something that can marry those two together, because our children aren't the only people who are feeling these things.
I mean, right, and you had also talked about parenting programs, and I want you to know that that was discussed at length at 25 and Live meetings and with McKeon. And what ended up happening was, I mean, we ended up, you know, kind of outlining a series that would happen for these meetings. But then because of things that the schools were planning and that the principals were doing inside their own schools, you know, for the parents, it got put on the back burner. So because they felt that they were already addressing those issues with programs that they had. So I want you to know that we did hear you and we did, you know, have a lot of discussion about that, but I'll definitely
keep
bring this up too, definitely.
Yeah. Any more questions of Angie or comments? Thank you very much.
Oh, you're
Angie.
Welcome. Thank you guys very much for having me.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to move on then to the Community Services Department, and we have a couple of items on the agenda, so turn it over to you, ladies. You're number three, Mayor.
Well, actually, I did talk to Vern, okay, and right now I'm in a draft for capital, and some of the items were removed. And I don't know, Vern, if you want to address that, where we're going with it, because you and I have not had a chance to discuss this yet.
And I need to talk to council more tomorrow prior to the meeting or during the meeting, because
I inherited the capital plan that was approved in December. And for 2020, it showed almost $18 million of departmental capital and infrastructure projects being completed this year. But after Maggie and I put all the numbers together that council got this weekend, without borrowing additional money, we can only come up with about $9.5 million of that $18 million, so call it half. So we're going to ask the budget to be adopted tomorrow with that number, and then sit down with council as soon as council wants after tomorrow's meeting. And we're going to have to redo the five-year capital plan going forward, because I suspect that this bottom line here of $18 million this year, $25 million in 21, 18, 12, is more of a wish list than it can be realistically funded. What's that?
It's the dream.
It's the dream. Well, that's great if the document said dream 5-year capital plan, because when I look at it from a financial perspective, and this is Maggie and finance updated it
since I came, before I came with the PO line, so we knew how much of this money we already had tucked aside, but I think the next step is to now structure it so that we get to a number each year of how much money we're going to have available each year that we project of internally generated cash, and then council and the administration have to make a decision. Are we going to stick with that capital number and infrastructure number for that year, or are we going to add to it by borrowing? Because right now, we can't do $18 million worth of capital project, capital purchases and infrastructure projects. So I told Marilyn, it's not up to Maggie and I to X and check out of this 2020 list on these 20-some pages. That's really a legislative body, an administrative decision we just implement. So what we're going to do then is, again, sit down with whoever wants to participate and say, okay, here's the $18 million list for 2020. If you want to do $18 million, give us the approval to start figuring out how we're going to go through the steps of borrowing another $9 million this year. If you want to do what we're going to be able to generate internally, then council and mayor whittle that 18 number down to 9.5.
When this whittling was done with the director's involvement, or was that more a paper project with you and Maggie working?
This was done prior to me coming aboard.
Okay, so, but I understand, but the changing, the reduction of earned from the 18 million down to the...
It wasn't, we haven't whittled yet. All we've said is, hey, of this 18 million that's on here, we're only going to generate about 9.5. So we haven't picked and choose which projects are going.
So none of them have, so none of them have the directors sitting here. If they were to look at their budgets, it was the same as they submitted earlier.
Yeah, everybody's still sitting on the 18 million.
Gotcha.
Thinking, hey, we're going to be able to do everything in 2020 that we thought we were going to be able to.
Okay, I understand. So would it be, I'm sorry, would it be correct to think that the perhaps the ideal way to do it is when it's the first have the directors have their input in it? Because as a council person, I certainly wouldn't want to say, well, we've got to cut this, cut that. I'd rather have the directors make their, because if it was a wish list, and they tell us what their priorities are, and then we can work from there.
That is have budget.
That's a fair process.
Yeah,
we could.
Administration could frame it up.
Yeah.
That to me would make more sense.
We could get some input from directors and the mayor as to what the priorities of that 18.
Yeah,
I would have hoped that process had already taken place to get to this point, but obviously it did, but it exceeded our ability.
Yeah. So that impacts all the other years, too.
Oh, sure. For sure, because if we can't come up with 17 this year, unless income tax is going to go up by 8 million next year, I don't know how we're going to figure 25.
Yes, sir.
It's like some of the money I had has been moved to public lands and building because of the bus, quite a bit of money, but that's on hold right now in addition to the billing to see what direction we're going to take overall with the complex. So it's not that it's gone, it's just that we have to wait and see what's going to happen now, what direction we're
so we will. We'll scalpel that and then bring it to council, explain the logic as to how we reduced, and then you can add, subtract, make a priority, help us prioritize.
Right. A good part of that, though, is street repairs now.
A lot of it is, and that'll be...
Yeah,
the departmental stuff that most of you are concerned with is only 3 of the 18, 3 million. So it will be easier, but that's if the directors, the mayor, and council place the priority on the 3 versus the 14, the 15 remaining. And some of it's in progress, so we can't stop the Lafayette job. And
how much of it's been encumbered, though?
Well, as of when this was written, about 7 million of the 18, so we still needed another 11 to come up.
When was that one?
11, that doesn't include the 8.
Oh, that was in December.
So that was approved in December.
You said it was already done before you started in November.
Yeah, I started mid-November.
So
it was on the agenda first.
Was that John Barry's you started, or was that the...
It was a process that we've always used.
Yeah, I don't know how the previous mayor and how the previous...
It's a process that we've always... And then we just...
You had an interim finance director for most of the year, so it was probably a complicated process last year that didn't get the proper attention and focus it probably needed.
So what we're saying is there's so much we need allocated for to finish the projects, the road committed projects that we've already started. Then there's the departmental, that $3 million that we've got to see how much of that we can sustain and hold on to without compromising our level of service. And then we'll see the accordion, like there's a $350,000 modification tomorrow night, or tomorrow night to be, with respect to Lafayette. I mean, these are things that will eat up our contingencies, and so we'll make sure we bring it to council before we're compromised, rather than waiting till after and then asking, well, it's permission instead of forgiveness. At least that's always the goal.
Yeah, thanks for...
Thank you. Thanks, Vern, I appreciate it. The other on the agenda is what I wanted to address is new programming. We've talked about this numerous times. Two issues. One, when we'll talk about it when we talk about your advisory board, too, that you're suggesting that we have. We are looking for new programming, new events, meeting with my staff and recreation staff to address those issues to try to find some exciting programs. And also for all age groups. I know we had some suggestions from parents, and I don't know, Mayor, if you want to address that 2 to 6-year-old population or have any comments on that.
No, keep going.
Okay, keep going. We had some parents that came forward that want programming for the age group 2 and 6-year-old. They felt we fell short for that age group. Tom and I put together a little bit of a report for the mayor showing what are programs that we've had in the previous years, what was successful, what people didn't sign up for. We have offered a lot of programs sometimes. These are younger families coming in asking for things, but one of the things I did went to 4 major communities, talked to their directors, found out how they fund some of these programs. One was by a levy, one was by income tax. It was a 1/8 of 1% of the income tax goes to the programming for the recreation and the community services department. So the bottom line is these parents want more programming. And they approached with a letter to the mayor, and mayor was so kind to bring us into it to make sure that we do something about it. And we are moving forward with that. We did a survey that we're putting together that'll go in the city newsletter as to what parents overall would like, and actually going to include other age groups. So that's where we basically stand right now to address those issues.
They're also helping us frame the survey too.
Right.
We're asking them to give us information that we could add to the survey, and then they'll help us pulse the survey results, and then it'll just make it more seamless when we create these programs. Because we showed them that we had some programs, but we didn't have the participation. And so the educational process really helped them, and the result was it's helping us, because that result will be the survey, which they're helping us frame, is resident driven. So the goal is to then say, okay, when we get the survey results, we'll be able to handcraft and come up with a strategy that gets as much value added to that younger population, as well as doesn't diminish our existing programming, so.
And as an example, just I had a program called Little Yogis. It was a yoga class for 2 to 6-year-olds. And we sent out to the parents, the 2-year-olds, we had 45 parents emails. So we blasted an email to all of them saying we're having this little, this class for the children. One person signed up.
So all the administrators had to sit down and play yogi.
No, I'm just kidding. What was a program like that cost? Like what was per family?
It was $10 a week. And the issue, what I will say, that is an issue in talking to the other directors from the other communities. I went to Strongsville, Westlake, Beechwood, Orange District, because they have a phenomenal program there. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is every one of them said, they've been doing it for 20 years, it's hard to get the people, I only have three people sign up, I only have five. So we have to see, not to make excuses, but how can we make it better? And I think once we get the survey, we'll be able to do that.
And the size of your population base.
Right, and then I did the population compare, 37,000, 12,000, 7,000, yeah. But I think we still went ahead with the Little Yogi program. It has five children in it, we still did the program.
Well, that's okay.
You know, it is okay, and they love it, so.
That's good. How do you guys determine what you're charging for these programs?
Well, we basically look at the overall cost and what it is, and we basically try to break even if we can. Minus sometimes our staffing.
A lot of times we don't include the staffing in it, and if it's an outside contractor.
So why is pricing an issue, like trying to break even, I mean, are they complaining that it costs too much, or?
You know, that's one thing, in the meeting we had with the mayor, this whole group said that there were no issues with pricing. In fact, we did a survey for our basketball program, and I'm gonna pass that out when I get to it, and you'll see there's no issues with pricing.
I mean, for me with kids, and, you know, like what I pay for them to play here, I think it's ridiculously cheap. For the facilities that our kids have to use, and you have families that live in other communities that are paying far more than what we pay for subpar facilities, maybe it's time we, you know, raise prices a little bit on that stuff, because the parents have to know that, you know, they're getting the best of the best here.
So I guess I have the opposite approach. I look at that as an advantage to our community. So it's like, you know, what are some of the amenities that we offer? Well, we offer these programs. They're small programs. I remember at the Independence High School, I took a class with Mr. Schultz called American Utopias. And there were three of us in the class. We went to Zora Village, and, you know, whatever that thing costs, it wasn't the $5 that I paid for the program, you know. But in 1981, that was a pretty good chunk of change for the Cleveland Press that I put together to do that, you know. So, but I guess my feeling is that all these programs should be either underpriced or break even for like outside vendors, that type of thing. But like, the goal isn't really to make money. The goal is to have some type of fee so they don't take advantage of it, you know. So if it's free, then, you know, it's free, and you don't pay for it, then, you know, you have a cavalier attitude. However, but on something like this, it's like, you know, you make it more than affordable for people, because that's part of the Independence advantage. That's what you get for living here. You know, you pay the lowest property taxes of any incorporated city, and you get amenities like this. And I think that's a, so just a personal opinion. So when Dottie first started these programs, remember, we whacked down all these fees. You know, she wanted to charge $135 to be a Civic Center member. We took it down to $35. And she's like, oh, we're never going to, I was like, you're never going to make it up anyway. You're not. The cost of those buildings, you're never going to make it up through these types of things. So don't try, I guess, is my opinion of it. So it's just a philosophical thing. I think the mayor has a similar view on a lot of that. It's like, it's an advantage to living here. And, you know, people, we love being able to tell, hey, go to Seven Hills and it's this. You come to Independence and it's this, you know. And it's like, wow, it's great. So it's like, it spreads the gospel. Yeah, exactly. So I think that's why those programs have been like that over the years traditionally. And I personally embrace that philosophy, but not everybody does. But.
And I kind of take the middle road, you know. I think that we certainly want to offer things that are more affordable than many of our neighboring communities. And I think that's something we pride ourselves on the ability to do. But I also think, to Chris's point, that we do need to periodically look at our rates, make a comparison, and make decisions about them. Because what we don't want to have happen is what did at one point in the past, where we had to make considering a rather significant increase in some programming, and it was problematic for parents. So I'm more of the mind that I'd like to see periodic, incremental. I'm never saying break even. Yes, little incremental things. So little incremental increases. I think one of the things that the Community Services Department is doing, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but is when we have some of our trips, we're asking for a little nominal fee, hoping that they don't cancel out with $5, $3, something like this, because we're renting our buses now. So, and sometimes I think you even give some of that back. I don't know how you do that, you know.
They get the $5
back. That's what I thought.
What occurred was I would have trips like start out with 40 people, yes. On the day of the trip, 13 more.
Right, yeah. And I think when something is very inexpensive, or no cost, that people sometimes don't value it as much and understand that there was not only the planning behind it, but the cost expended for it. So I think to have a cost is appropriate, and to incrementally look at where we stand, and never to look to, I agree with you with that, never looking to cover all of our costs, but somewhere in between.
Well, and again, I reiterate, if you're going on a trip that's like to the zoo, that's free. We charge them $5. They show up, they get their $5 back.
Right.
You know, it's just that, that $5, believe it or not, will make them show up.
Yes, yes.
Sure.
But it's a good incentive.
We eat the cost of the bus rental, that's what you're telling me. We eat every cost.
Yes.
Nothing breaks even, almost nothing breaks even.
As a business guy, this is going to be rough.
That's why I said, I'm kind of.
Not used to losing money.
I'm kind of in the middle there because I see that, you know, and where we need to make some adjustments.
You look at a bus that's costing me $600 to rent, and if they didn't show up, then what?
40 people times $5.
That's.
Yeah, it's not a business.
I have mayor, people that mayor's listing, and I didn't know if anybody'd show up, but they're showing up, so.
Oh.
They just want to see your face.
So they want to see if you're going to listen is what they're doing, so you're listening.
Not the ones, if I get done, I'll come back.
Okay, thank you for your time, Mayor, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
What else, is there anything you need me for with respect to anything else on the agenda, or I'm sure my team can.
Could I just use your?
We'll give you input, we'll, you'll see, you know, when we get through it, what, where we go with it, but.
Yeah, we've had some discussions internally, but yeah, if there's anything else to talk about, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you.
So Mayor, anything else on that grant application update, though?
Well, the grant application, you know, Jim, maybe Senator Dolan was yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
Perhaps you could give us an update, I know there's a little bit of a delay, but maybe you want to address that.
Sure, so we did put in an application, and it comes through the state capital improvements budget. And the state capital improvement budget was supposed to be introduced around now. There was a deadline of the first week of January that legislators and the governor asked. So what this is, it's a, you know, a place like Cleveland gets like $30 million. And, or excuse me, Northeast Ohio gets that. So Cleveland gets maybe $15 million. These are called community projects. So these are non-state, so what the capital improvements budget is for prisons, for universities, for hospitals, you know, things that the state manages. And then they've expanded it to include community pot monies. So we put in a modest proposal for what, $150,000 was it? $130,000.
$150,000.
$150,000, yeah. And so we put in for the Civic Center. And the bill has not been introduced as yet. So the legislature is on recess until the next 2 weeks from now. I'm told that they'll come back and they'll start this up in April. They currently have some disagreements about a funding formula for schools. And until that thing gets resolved, they're still messing with this. This could happen in October, it could happen in April. So I emailed your work product to the governor's office and to the lady who was in charge in this area of, for the governor. They have these regional directors, and they appreciated that. And then obviously Senator Dolan. So Senator Dolan came to the Civic Center yesterday. He saw the condition of our, he was very happy, enjoyed being with our residents. And he saw limited facilities that we had. And so as I'm sitting there trying to talk how limited we have residents coming up and say, oh, they drive me for prescriptions. Wasn't the best PR.
So what city is that you're talking about?
Yes. Change the topic.
But the kitchen is still small.
And so he saw that. He was standing in line for a while, and then he realized, we both realized we were in the wrong line. He just got a hot dog. So anyway, so he is the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, and he's going to sponsor this bill. So, you know, having him be a champion for us is important. We have other people who are asking as well, and it might be that, it might be less money, it might be nothing. So once we see the bill introduced, I'll keep you posted. Like I said, it might be sometime in April. The good news is a very good friend of mine is the House Finance Chairman, now Jamie Callender. My wife works for him, and he's there temporarily while Senator or Representative Olslager has back problems. So that's a nice opportunity for us as well, I intend to discuss this with him as well. So we'll see where it goes.
When you're speaking about driving for prescriptions and in relationship to Councilman Walchanowicz's comment about the rates and all, I do have some material that I was going to share with you. I'll send it over to your office. I have an email on it with some of the transportation costs in an area village near us. And it's a village that very much supports their residents with just amazing services. And you're going to be surprised when you see some of those costs for transportation. So I'll send that to you. Okay. Anything else, Mayor? Okay. If we could please go on then to Recreation Department.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie, I appreciate you taking this for me. Unfortunately, I don't know if I'm going to end up changing this, because after talking with Greg O'Brien, that was the end of last year, we were talking about this. He came up with rewording for our main, if you want to see, get one, for our main pass sign-up sheets. And I think everybody's got one.
And there was one other piece of information, is it possible to get that in, just to...
Oh, here.
The chairwoman needs that, so thank you.
All right, Tom.
So this is, when people sign up for passes at the Civic Center, these are the, this is the form that they use. So the old form is on your left, and the new form is the one that Greg O'Brien proposed, and that's the one that he implemented in December, that was. So it does just specify here that there is a fine if you're, it's considered theft of services. And so far, we haven't had anybody really question this, although we haven't had any issues lately with anybody trying to do anything. So, you know, whether it's related to this, I can't say, but it seems like a simple solution, but at least we have some leverage now.
Yeah.
You know, it's here, they have to sign this when they either get a new pass or renew their pass. So I think this is a step in the right direction, and we didn't have to go off, you know, through the legwork of changing the pending ordinance.
Okay. Well, if that helps to resolve some of the issues, that's what we were aiming for, so that's just as well, I would say. Well, maybe then if you could, Tom, keep us surprised of how this is going, so that would be helpful to us. Anybody have any questions on that?
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I just have one quick question for you. So do we read this to them, or do they just read it themselves, or are we taking initiative to read it to them?
We don't take initiative to read it to them, but we do put it in front of them, and we say to, you know, to read this and then fill it out and sign it. So we do, it's not like we just throw it on the counter to them.
They're doing the documents, obviously.
Signed by the X. We ask them to read it,
And then, like,
the
bottom signature, is that for a desk person to sign, then after the resident signs?
This in reference to the general waiver text that's right below that. Yeah. So that just kind of goes with our building liability.
Yeah.
Okay, so then nobody, you know, like, no desk employee signs one of these after...
After they sign, no.
That might be a good idea.
It's a bad point. And it might be a good idea.
You know, I'm working the counter, and someone comes in, say, I want to get a pass, they read, I said, and then after they're done, I ask, okay, did you read the highlighted area? They say yes, I sign it, I validate that they sign it this way.
Right. I can speak to that as, you know, supervising a lot and being around the desk, while there is no kind of indication for that on the actual membership form, that is kind of an informal thing that we have been doing. That, you know, somebody comes in, usually it's initialed by the person at the front desk that has issued the membership to them, so you're able to kind of trace that.
Okay,
back.
Do we stamp these at all?
Date stamp?
Not a date stamp, no.
Okay, well, what if...
But you'd be able to, say, if they sign up for a membership in this system, you'd be able to see the date stamp would go through Sportsman when they would sign up.
We go through the computerized program. Yeah.
So it would be the same day they would sign this, but it would say, you know, say they sign up today, it would be March 9th, and that would show up in the system, yes.
Would you believe, since it's your department, that it would be possible to do the signature validating by the staff person, or would it be too cumbersome for you?
Ten seconds to sign your name,
and then read it back. Do you affirm that?
Either they sign it, or we physically stamp the paper.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I really do. It kind of adds a little bit more to it too, for lack of a better word. You know, a little bit more reinforcement of the significance of it. That's a good idea.
In addition to this, in Sportsman, it does also put the till operator's name, so you would be able to look up.
We could trace that, it back
yeah,
to who
that's
sold
like an extra.
Pass. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You
could, but their actual signature.
Well, I'm just figuring if the person buying the pass sees the staff member signing it.
Also, this does not go to the resident, right?
No.
Should it? I mean, I'm just throwing that out there. I'm not telling you, you know, how to run your area, but should it? Because now they're going to have this at home in front of them?
Well, you know, the staff member, they fill it out, they sign it, staff member signs it. We keep making, we make a copy, we keep the main, they get the photocopy.
I'm just wondering.
Yeah, there's a lot of forms you do like that, so I wouldn't say opposition.
That's pretty, you know, pretty significant there.
This way they're walking out with this and a receipt, not just a receipt.
If you feel it's doable by your department, Tom, I think that, you know, something worth considering. I don't want to give you more work, but.
It'll just be, it'll just help us.
It's just one more block that, you know, pushes it.
Thanks. I think that's a good way. It just kind of shows you how the process works because, you know, you have the issue, going to look at the legislative ordinance changes and then being able to resolve it with this. That's great. That's great. Hopefully resolve it.
Madam Chair, while we're talking about that, would you mind if I bring up a little bit of business along these lines? So, a couple of things. So, I've been intrigued by our conversations at this committee as it relates to safety. And, you know, we've had some conversation as council about making this building secure, City Hall. I think your building needs to be secure. You got more residents going there. It's a soft target. We found out, unfortunately, Minnesota Recreation Center that's got shot up a few weeks back. Has there been discussion about camera security? Because if you're going to submit a, you know, capital, and I would think this has got to be pretty high priority for us. And I was just wondering what you thought about that.
Hey, Jim, can I address that?
Sure.
Kind of right now, we're just started a GPD study.
Right.
And security is one of the areas that they do focus on. They started a study this week. I could go to the fire department tomorrow. I don't know what other areas are going to go, but they're going to meet with every, you know, every director at their building to find out what their concerns and what their needs are. GPD, when they look at a facility, their main, you know, goal when they start prioritizing things is safety and security. So I think that they'll bring a lot of insight into it, but they are going to, you know, talk to the directors to find out, you know, hey, you know, what are your concerns? And I know that one of the first things Tom would mention, or Marilyn, will be, you know, the security issue.
Second question I have along those lines, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, is I used to employ a fingerprint system, and I found it eliminated fraud. So we had people who came in a testing center, and they said they were Jim Trakas. They put their thumbprint down, and they were Jim Trakas. And the next guy who came in and said he was Jim with the thumbprint, it was somebody else, got referred to the police. So I'm just curious if we, for security purposes, because these are supposed to be our residents, right? I don't know if they are or not, but I hope they are. Would that be something that could help us from a security perspective, that they can come in and out with the thumbprint and they just go on and then we know that they're our resident?
Well, one of the old gyms I worked out at, your pass had a barcode on it. Yeah. And like we scan it at the front desk or put your code in. In order for the door to open to get into the gym, I had to swipe my card and then the door clicked and I can go in. Maybe there's a way to switch how we get in. I mean, now granted, there's a lot of seniors that maybe not have passes and stuff. It would have to be something now where everybody has to have a pass to get into the building, but this way.
Which would be potentially available for our residents. You know the number of non-residents who access that building every single day, particularly the community services side, but I'm sure some even on the rec side as well. That's
all the
it.
Rental for the
we
banker
have
rooms.
Meetings, we have, yeah. And then, you know, you'll have the Cuyahoga County this meeting there or that, you know, and that's, and but that speaks again to the point why we're highlighting this. I agree 100% with what Jim had said, and I know we've had these discussions before, and I know that the group is going to look at it the whole citywide. But when we initially began some of those discussions, they were talking about what was going to be done to City Hall, and I spoke up right then and there and said, I don't dismiss that we need safety here, but I think that our building with community service, exactly. And the building is open from in the dark in the morning until in the dark at the night, and some of those earliest and latest hours have our most limited number of staff. and some of our part-time staff, exactly.
You've got children, you've got seniors, these are all vulnerable populations.
100%. So although I would agree that it'd be nice if we could have something to only open the door to those who are, should have access, I don't know how that would work. So I think we need to look at other measures, definitely.
So to that point, there's a way to do that, because a resident's supposed to be with a person, right, if they're coming? If I'm a community member and I'm sponsoring an organization, I'm supposed to be there.
On the rec side of the building, yes, you're correct.
Yeah.
Not on our side.
Not on your side.
The person, in essence, should be there, like if you're using it for a shower or a party or something, yes. You are there, but that person's not necessarily standing at the date, or the desk, rather, validating that all those people are their guests. They're in the room, running the party, getting everything ready and so forth. But that, I know Community Services has worked diligently to make sure that it is, if a resident is renting those rooms, that resident is in, is there, is in person there at that event, because that was a big issue for a while, they struggled with.
So another way to do that, Kathleen, is to say that everybody has to have some form of picture ID, and they've got to scan that ID like you're talking about. So they may not be a resident, but we have to know who they are. So knowing who's in the building, I think, is kind of the issue.
Yeah, because everyone can scan your driver's license now, that's how they...
Exactly, so you could do that.
Pops right up.
Okay, well, so as far as the rec side goes, obviously, anybody who's a member already has a photo ID that they would scan in. One piece of software that we do have at the Civic Center front desk, software called SafePoint, and we usually use that for the non-resident guests that come in. It is a driver's license scan. So basically, it goes a driver's license scan, their name comes up. Originally, I believe, was implemented. We had a concern about somebody who... Basically for criminal reasons, that it was somebody in the building that may have had some criminal record, that we wanted to make sure whoever was coming in the building wasn't just, hey, this is our guest, we have no idea who they are. But I think it also works really well as far as liability of, we have that exact name and record of the people that are in the building.
Yeah, and what time they were there, and
yes,
I think that's really critical.
Yeah. We do have that.
Are we still only charging $4 for non-resident fee?
$5 for like a daily fee.
$5.
You know,
it was $4 25 years ago, and I was bringing a friend in. It hasn't gone up much in 25 years.
No, it's $5 for the
lunch is still $3. Okay, it's opening. But you know, the issue with that is that even at the rug department, there's no, you don't walk through like
central
style.
Yeah.
Or
you could have 10 people walking in at the same time.
Of course.
Rio, go this way. You know, I have delivery people coming in, delivery men. Unless I have an entrance where it's going to be a single file. They come in and can't get past there till they swipe that license.
You may have that. I mean, so that's
right down the road.
Yeah,
I'm just saying right
now,
you
can't do that,
we can't.
And you can't hold a person, even when there's two at the desk accountable. One is working with residents, another one answering the phone. There's a line up there. They're not going to see everybody who comes in.
Right, the entire area, when we're talking about renovating and stuff, would have to be reconfigured.
But I'm interested, Eric, this SafePoint software you speak of, mm-hmm. is that on your side, or does the Community Services side have access to that also?
On our side.
Okay.
And I know we've had, discussions in the past, it's just at our desk, but we don't have it at the field house. Usually a thing we have is we have a pickleball on Sundays, and I'm always there on Sundays. So there's a lot of, guests that come in for pickleball. They have to scan all their IDs, and we've had a little bit of resistance because we have people that go to the field house during the week. They don't have to scan their IDs, but they have to scan their IDs to the Civic Center. So
I would suggest that we take a strong look at that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to create bottlenecks, but we should know who's in our building. So.
But you have an issue at the field house in the after-school program. There's the three rooms, and there's the hallway going into the...
They can go right in there. Absolutely. Yeah.
And
technically, no one's allowed beyond that plant before... 5 o'clock, right? Or before six?
6 o'clock.
They have tournaments and stuff going on prior to that with the basketball and stuff.
There's a couple that
come back in
the
door.
And we don't always get, we don't have all three courts, so people use the third court for other things.
I think for your benefit.
It would be the school, though, it wouldn't be us, there's only, I think there's three events throughout the year that do start.
Okay, I'm just saying that.
Well, I think that the comments are very valid, very important, and hopefully when the company comes through with Dennis and is able to evaluate, they'll get all that input from you. So hopefully they can give us some suggestions and direction and with your input as to how we could better deal with that, because it is an extremely important issue.
I mean, GBD, I mean, they're doing schools and gyms, and they should have answers for all that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be, you know, I think it's important, because again, you know, I go to military installations, and without a picture ID and without a purpose, without orders, I can't get in. So that's a military thing. However, these are our children, you know, it's like, you got somebody who, you know, on a background check, there's software that can find it on a background check, this person may have a problem. We should know that person's in the building, you know what I mean? So it should send you a flag. I don't know if that safe software does it, I mean, it's like, it should be able to do that. And I've had experiences where I've seen that, I mean, I know when people are in the building who shouldn't be in the building, you know? And those are the types of things that I think to protect our residents. I mean, it's not inexpensive to do those things, but boy, I think we need to be talking about it.
Through the chair.
Yes.
I get what you're saying, but don't make it so onerous on the residents who use that facility every day to say that the person that's coming 6-7 days a week, you gotta bring your license every time, you gotta bring your pass every time. I'd be like, come on, you don't know me by now? A lot of times I go up there, I don't take a phone, I don't take a license, I don't take my ID. I punch my number in and I go, so.
But you punch your number in.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm here and hey, we're gonna have to require the pass, we're gonna have to require the license, and it seems like we're going to yesterday's technology where you go to thumbprint or something that's tomorrow's technology, forcing people to, especially the regulars, to bring something with them every time. I see dozens of people in the morning, the regulars, they just come to work out, they have their keys and that's it.
But they do their numbers for them, are you saying?
Probably, I'm assuming.
Yeah, well, that's still a way, yeah.
And that connects to you, and we know you're in the building. I think that would be totally appropriate. This is for people who really are not, you know.
I mean, we are fortunately, we're such a small town, all of our employees know most of our residents when they're coming in. The big thing that we have issues with when we have basketball games on Saturday mornings in the civic center, you know, you get people coming in from different cities, and it is sometimes a big mass. A whole team from Brecksville's coming in with their parents. So, you know, but I will say, because my kids have been on, you know, in the same league, and we travel to Brecksville, Broadway Heights, Seven Hills. When we walk in all the other rec centers, though, when you're walking in as a, you know, as a parent watching your kid, nobody checks it. I mean, Brecksville, Broadview Heights, Seven Hills, I mean, Valley View, nobody, you know, so it's not like, so we're not lacking in that regard, but you know, like right now on a normal day, our girls are on top of things and, you know, checking everybody. And like Vern said, we have, you know, if you don't want to bring your ID, you know, you put your code in that you have.
Right.
And that goes directly to him, so I mean, that's good.
Acceptable, yes. Yeah. All right, good. Yeah. Any Prime Network membership, anything else, Tom?
Okay, well, I'm just kind of be a little proactive on this, because I know it's probably going to come up at some point, because now we're involved with this Prime Fitness membership, and this kind of piggybacked off of the Silver Sneakers program. I'm not sure. Like, have you read on that?
No, I'm not familiar.
Okay, Eric's going to explain it more, but I want to bring this up and just discuss this now, because I think it will start affecting our numbers in our building, possibly, because I'll bring an example. Like right now, anybody that's on our health plan can join quite a number of other facilities. And I'm just going to bring it up one. Terry Ginto's husband works over in Middleburg Heights. He's like, wow, I can go to Middleburg Heights for free. He goes, heck, I work out there. I'm going to go to Middleburg Heights. So, like, right now he comes for lunch and he comes to our civic center. And again, I'm just using that as one example.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's a neat program. But I did talk to a couple of the other directors. Nina had talked to Bob D'Amico over in Westlake, and they are on the program, but he says they're strictly on it to generate revenue. And in our case, we're not looking to generate revenue. We're more serving our residents, and we really don't want non-residents in our building. Not to say we don't, let me phrase that, not that we don't want non-residents, we want, the building was built for our residents. And their guests. So if the non-residents want to come in with one of our residents, that's fine. So I guess I just want to say that, I want to bring this out there, that, you know, I don't think at this point, unless anybody tells me something different, I don't think joining this Prime Fitness membership will benefit the City of Independence as a whole.
So you mean us becoming one of the names up on that board there?
Yeah, so just a Cliff's Notes quickly how it works. It's very similar to Silver Sneakers or any of those programs. It's actually the same company that runs it. Basically, if we as a rec center were to join on our side, we contact the company, they come out and get some information, say, you know, how many members we have, what's the price of the membership, and basically, if somebody has a Prime Fitness Pass, like, you know, freelance through our healthcare, we would, you know, have access to this. We'd get the equivalent of whatever is the basic membership at that location for free. So, you know, basically, you know, a rec center, we'd get their basic membership. If it's any kind of, you know, Planet Fitness, something like that, it's their basic membership. And then when somebody with that Prime Fitness Pass goes to the location, depending on the amount of times they would go to that location per month, they get a bill back, say, for, you know, $3 per visit, up to 7 visits or something like that.
10 visits, yeah. Like Westlake will get reimbursed $3 per visit, up to 10 visits per month.
Yeah.
So they're making $30 per month for someone that joins, you know, their...
When I said no about the Prime Network membership, I thought you meant that we had it here. Did I know that we were having it here? That's why I was asking.
No, we don't have it in our civics,
that's what I mean.
We do have it on our health plan.
Right, that I'm familiar with, the health plan. I thought you meant we'll be getting it here.
No. And I don't recommend it at this point, unless someone here tells me that we should look into it. But I feel that we're going to get infiltrated with people who aren't residents of our city.
Well, there's a facility across the street that's got 1,800 people in it that could easily...
Yeah, exactly.
So what is our healthcare, Madam Chair? What is that program? I just went to that and I forgot. So what does it say about this program, that we were going to join it? Or that members...
Yeah, well, we're in already.
No, but not the civics.
No, not the civics. I know, that's right. We through our healthcare.
Right, we're
our health members.
Can go to these facilities, but our facility isn't part of the program.
Yeah, so that's kind of how we got familiar with it. So it's just kind of...
Other people would come here too, right? So that...
Yeah, we don't want that.
Yeah, so just something to be aware of since there are...
I'm just being proactive and bringing this out because I know I'm surprised it wasn't asked by anyone yet about this.
Yeah.
So that's why I just wanted to bring this on the table before.
It's like Mr. Ginto going to Middleburg. Their facility is a lot bigger than ours. Their workout area, the amount of machines and stuff they have is a whole lot more than ours. Sometimes there's already a way to work out upstairs. So yeah, we can't afford to have more people come in.
Okay. Gotcha. Anything else? Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Then we have the review status of Civic Center improvement projects and proposed ideas. Is that something you want to put on hold and loop?
Right, and we kind of need to
be a little bit.
Because of our finance director, we'll put because of our finance director.
Burn Blaze. For some
work to be done.
Work to be done there. Yes. What was the amount that we had already allocated for the building? Do we know?
Well, for this year, we had for the locker rooms a little bit over $200,000. But again, like Vern said, it was just on paper. It wasn't actually encumbered yet. So, but that locker room upgrade is was on the plan for this for 2020.
For this year.
And but I think the big thing is now to wait for this GPD group to come in and give their assessments of our building and. Okay. And go from there.
Okay. So we will put that item on hold in view of the GPD work and then the budget review that we're still going to have taking place for capital items. So.
Okay. I think the last thing I looked at was this is a copy of our survey that we had up for our basketball program. We used SurveyMonkey, but we used the free version of SurveyMonkey to hold you a pass. We had, 60-some children enrolled in our basketball program. Chris was excellent on basketball.
No, she played travel this year.
So out of 60, I think it was 64 participants, we got 10 responses back. So this is basically what we, our results, and there's some comments. I know there is one, that person that wasn't happy, but there was some things that went with that I can explain.
And when was this conducted, please?
This was sent out, I believe, 2 days after the final game of the season.
Which was February, the middle of February, 15th of February.
Okay.
So you had a 16% rate of return on the survey, which is good for someone. Usually it's about 2 to 3%, so that's not bad at all. It sounds small, but it's really not. So these are only residents?
Yes, these are all residents. They were in our program, yes.
Good registration process outcome there. That's very good.
It's interesting to see that everybody likes text messages instead of, nobody wants phone calls. It's all text messages.
Probably because we didn't want to weed out the robocalls from the regular ones, and we don't answer our phones anymore, yeah.
You're really right.
But there were some really nice comments, and we're getting together with Dimitri on this to see what we feel we can improve.
Nobody said phone call, that's funny. When they say teams seem stacked, what do they mean by that?
That's the one that kind of was the ringer in here that wasn't happy with a couple of things.
So it's happened in the past, there's particular coaches that like to pick the best of all the girls and put them on one team.
Oh.
And then it's just unfair competition for the other teams, anything. My, on defense to Tommy and Dimitri, Dimitri does everything he possibly can to keep every team as even as possible, so.
See, sometimes you get a thing like this, you get a coach, and Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, you've been coaching, but you get a coach, and then you get an assistant coach that have two of the best players, then you throw in a request to be on their team because of carpooling, so you've got three good players, Jim, on a team of 7 girls or boys.
Right.
So right there, you've got almost half your team of superstars.
Right.
So that's what I think this person is referring to. And it's hard to, you know, for Dimitri to, I mean, sometimes.
It's not for people to stack, right?
It's not, right, exactly.
Yeah.
So.
I hope they use every loophole to get every good girl on their team.
Do they have like a random selection process, or?
It's a draft.
Like I said, except for like in a case like I just said, a main coach, an assistant coach, and if you get one person that needs to drive with one of those two, then you've got three good, and if they're all good players, you've got three good players on a team of 7.
Yep.
So that's.
And just another asterisk call thrown here as far as the Cavs youth sports organization question. We've gotten some feedback that people hadn't received their ticket for the season, so we contacted our representative from the Cavs youth sports organization, and they sent the tickets out shortly after the survey was sent out.
Okay. Nice to see outcomes of surveys.
Right, it's a good thing, because sometimes you think, oh, they sent everything out, we're, you know, we got confirmations.
What about scheduling? Let that go this time out, little basketball. We're able to take care of all of our needs.
We had a good scheduling there. Can I bring this up, what you gave me, or is that kind of not out? I mean, what?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I think I have the same thing.
The field house?
Yeah.
Okay, I just.
I wish I could pull that schedule up here, because I would like to show everybody the schedule, and when we don't have an event over there, how the places are going.
Prime example, not to interrupt you. I was there yesterday, everyone belly aches if they can't get a weekend in there. I went in there at 3 o'clock. Dennis was taking a nap, I think. Just, he wasn't. I had the whole court. I literally had the whole field house for my 9 girls that were there. There was nowhere there.
I welcome anyone to come into my office and I can pull up my computer and I'll go through the gates and I can show you, unfortunately, it's not, I don't even think it's a handful of people that's really having an issue. I think it's even less than a handful. That's just, that's in for another discussion.
It's people that don't understand that, you know, we do have to generate money off of that facility and what we can generate off of, it's got to kind of take a free 2-hour practice.
And what a great facility that is, even for some of our organizations like the Kiwanis with the pickleball, affording them that availability. And that's a great fundraiser for that organization, which then they turn around and give it back to things we need in our own community. So it's reciprocal.
We just came off of another nice event from Saturday. I think it was at the train show. The mayor was at the train show. He seemed pretty impressed. And there was a lot of residents that were there that just came to, I knew first of all it was a resident that ran that whole train show, but there was a lot of residents that came in to just walk through it and you know, they brought their kids in. So it was a real nice event.
It's fun for the kids to see that kind of stuff.
Oh, sure. I see there's one comment here. They wish the basketball program started prior to third grade, took their children to another time. Is it because of our volume, too?
We're actually changing that this year.
Oh, okay.
We've got plans. We're going to go down to first and second grade.
Nice, okay.
Wow.
That's great.
We have a kids' garden program, too, right now that's on Saturdays for 4 Saturdays, and we have 33 kids?
No, I think it's more closer to 40.
What type of baskets are they shooting?
They're just showing the basics. I mean, it's all basics, you know.
We got some smaller real basketballs, and we have 2 of our basketball nets in the Civic Center that are able to be adjusted down.
That's like, what happened? Kids are monsters. It's just unfortunate that, you know, when the kids are able to be on a team and it's third grade, you know, they're going against cities that have already been playing organized basketball for 2 years, and it just, our girls are 2 years behind.
Whoever thought we would say our third graders are behind, and you know what I mean? It's just a different world.
I know, you know, so it's just, it's something that they need to address.
That's great. Thanks for sharing this. Do we have any other questions for Tom or Eric about this survey? That's good. Helpful for us to have this. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Good job, Eric.
The last item we have on the agenda is, review proposal to establish a citizens board to serve in advisory capacity to community services and recreation department. It sounds like a great segue from having gotten some input information here from the rec department. So would you like to pass this out for us?
I would be glad to, absolutely. Okay. Can you take one down and pass around? Thank you, and thanks for the opportunity to bring this to the committee. Been an idea I've had for a little while. We've talked, just very basically about it. But so for about 20 years, Independence had a recreation board, and we abolished it in the 1990s. I don't know why. I was around, but I don't remember abolishing it. So the idea behind this is that we have enough programming and potential programming and fees and costs and stuff like that, but I thought it might make some sense to have a citizen sounding board on these types of issues so that as people approach you, you could have a formal organization who can vet this, do research for you, as employees get ideas, come back, you know, and say, hey, these are some things we'd like to see. The idea is to have users of the facilities, you know, come up with some of these ideas. So one of the approaches is to have someone who is a student in our schools be on the commission. Now, maybe we can't find someone like that, but I guess the idea behind it is just to try to increase the amount of the public who does have a appetite for these programs to help come up with suggestions for us. If there's programs that aren't working, you know, they can come back to us and say, hey, we didn't have the participation we wanted, or, you know. So I think it's another sounding board for our community to have people who are involved to help come up with some ideas. And, you know, sometimes the residents go to you guys directly, and if you get the wrong answer, then other people get calls. And so I thought, you know, it's a little bit of a process where you can have a citizens review committee, and many communities have them, who could just help advise you on these issues. It's a non-binding advisement, and, you know, the idea is to just increase citizen involvement and to help you have more people who can listen to some of the ideas that you have, and then maybe come up with some of their own, or other citizens come up with it. So I know that a number of people, other communities have this. Another idea behind this would be, we have talked about having parks and other recreation facilities around town. So how does that mesh with what we currently do? Do you need other parks and recreation committees? So this committee could help you come up with opinions as to need as well, and perhaps priorities. So it would be non-binding. It would be basically advisory in nature, and just kind of help us to for future planning and current planning. And you know, exactly what you're talking about here, they would help you to, you know, come up with you know, make recommendations, you know, and be able to be a sounding board for input. So I know that dozens of communities in this area, we have 60 communities in Cuyahoga County, a majority of our communities, over 45 of them, have a parks and recreation type board. Haven't seen a community services board, because we're a pretty unique community in offering a lot of those types of services. So anyway, that's the concept behind it, and thought it would be non-intrusive and beneficial.
How many people would you want to sit on a board like this?
Five. You said five.
Five, yeah.
That's all volunteer, correct?
All volunteer.
If we wanted to compensate them, we could. Free ice cream cone.
Slushies at the park.
I can only speak to my experience, which was that we did have a senior advisory council committee back in the early 2000s, still probably about, I'm not really sure, Mayor, maybe about...
I was just thinking about that one.
Maybe about 2005, 6, maybe up until then. It didn't go much longer than about those first 5 or so years. And I was really excited about it. I just started it when I was working in community services, and hand-picked seniors that I had come to know and the staff had come to know were going to be very involved and would provide good input. So these were people who we thought were ideal to be on it. They were not always people who agreed with what we were doing. Some had brought different ideas. That was okay too. But they were there. They were visible.
Didn't
they
mayor
were
appoint some of them? Wasn't there one or two that
maybe
was appointed by mayor, and then you appointed the other ones, I think.
Maybe, I don't remember. But my point is, there are people who we knew would come and would want to be involved. And I will tell you, those meetings were very, very difficult meetings, because if I did not bring a full agenda, no agenda came. And so I think this is as an idea worth considering. I just wouldn't want it to be more work for the departments. You know, I'd want it to be a supplement to what they're doing. I would want it to be something that helps them, but not something that they have to create a whole agenda for. And that's how it was. And I didn't want it to be that way. I didn't dictatorially place it that way. I said, you know, come submit to me ideas of what we can put on the agenda. And month after month, nothing ever came.
It fits perfect to that group of young adults that came in with us in the mayor's office a few weeks back. You know, they were very, like,
interested
in, you know, and that was that whole, like, 2 to 6 programming thing, you know.
So you can meet on an as-needed basis, and, you know, you don't have to meet on a monthly basis. I mean, the point isn't, I'm really glad you said that, because I forgot that we had that committee, and now we don't, right? But it's like, it's got to be functioning, and it's got to be a sounding board for you that's valuable. It shouldn't be a pain in the neck, you know. The idea isn't to make your life harder, it's to make it easier to, you know, be, to present ideas, and, you know, yay or nay, or maybe, or, you know, so then you know what people are thinking about, and to get people talking about our programs in the community. One of the things that obviously we struggle with is participation. You know, so some of our programs are highly successful, you know, some aren't. So the concept is to have people who could be advocates for our programs as well, and to further inform people. We're going to be putting together an additional communications person, perhaps as early as tomorrow, that, you know, can help get the message out and these types of things. So that's kind of the idea, and we could certainly structure it as an as-needed basis, and yeah, we don't have to pay anybody to do this. It would just be volunteers. If it doesn't work, you know, don't appoint anyone.
I mean, these parents are just looking for programs to, they can involve their young children into things, so.
Do you think that would be on YouTube?
I mean, I think it's a great concept, a great idea. A couple of things, going back, and maybe Vern will remember this too, back when they did do away with the rec board, if I'm not mistaken, they did away with the rec board and they created the community service board, community service committee. If I remember, Vern, do you remember when they, that by chance, when you were maybe on council at the time or anything then?
It's been so long ago, I don't remember.
Okay, if I asked Ed, I think that's what he, I remember years ago, that's what it was, like, that's when the rec board kind of got abolished and then they came up with the community service board. Anyway, the only thing that I have to say is like, and I think the mayor would say the same thing, is that if we get any citizens that come forward with issues, ideas, or suggestions, you know, like he did here, he called everybody into the office and said, hey, you know, what's on your mind, what could we do to help, and you know, and we're moving forward on doing it. Same thing, we're at the Civic Center, and my door's always open. Yesterday last Friday, I had a fellow come in the morning, and he gave me I got five suggestions and for improvements, and you know, minor things. He saw a couple things in the gym, and you know, minor things that most of the stuff tech service could fix, but anyway. So, you know, we have kind of an open door policy that, hey, if you have any
sure.
suggestions, ideas, you know, come on in, let us know, email us, call us. You know, so a lot of things happen that way. But again, if you want to be more formal, I'm all for it. You know, whatever this group decides, I'm all on board. You know, I just... You know, probably I think the one reason why we don't have a formal citizens board is I think it's because we are so open and small that we, you know, try and take in suggestions wherever we can. So I know.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe part of my concern, I understand if that's something everybody would want. And again, the open door policy, we do get a lot of suggestions, but maybe there's something out there that we're not, you know, getting or people aren't coming forward with. But I think, I don't know if I would consider having them make recommendations for capital improvement, infrastructure investment. Do you know what I'm saying? I think that I can see with programming and, you know, some of these amenities, some of these other things, but
sure.
Cost-wise, because they just, that would be, I think, a little difficult for somebody on the outside come in and make suggestions for that.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, that's great. That's really our job in a sense, right? Yeah. Gotcha.
Do we have... We talk about the fact that we're open for our residents and they come and approach us. Do we have some venues out there, and I'm just thinking a few as we're talking through this, mayor's listening nights, special meetings, you know, when a group like the group of families of 2 to 6-year-olds got together, using our comment boards through our media, our public media that we have, if we package those and reminded people that they're here and that we encourage them to use it for the purposes that Jim is stating in here, some of these very important purposes, do you think maybe that would be a route to try first and see if we get more momentum with that? And if we don't, maybe it's telling us that there isn't any unverbalized needs out there, that the people feel that they're communicating well enough with you through the channels already.
But what if you had something like a community service / recreation board listening night? You know, see how many people would come to that to address these issues, and if it, you know, if that comes and there's a real interest, or
it,
you know,
can grow out of that.
It could grow from something like that, yeah, to see if there really is an interest, yeah, to open it up to the residents and say, we're going to have this to get your input. Hopefully we're going to do that with a survey, because the survey is going to encompass all ages, and that may address some of it. But I'm open to trying anything to improve, you know, the departments.
Well, let's figure out some ideas about that.
All right, let's So maybe if you can, maybe we can keep this on the agenda for our next meeting to talk more about what avenues we could use, what approaches we could use. Maybe it is a listening night, I don't know, maybe it's using what we have out there now, but just reminding people that they're out there to communicate with us.
And the survey's going in this month's newsletter, correct?
I think April's, I think, I have to talk to Darren.
Darren, okay, I thought it was this month.
So then maybe at the May meeting, maybe we should hold this discussion to the May meeting? Let's do it, if you think it's going out in April, would you have some data, do you think, already by the May meeting, or not necessarily?
Well, especially if we also get, you know, a digital survey out, you know, we'll probably have some instantaneous.
Okay, and we could just talk about what we have at that point, so let's put it, would that be okay with you?
I'm by May, yeah.
Councilman Tracus, okay, we'll put it to the May meeting, that we'll add it to the agenda.
Commissioners meeting in May.
Yeah.
Well, actually, what do we do, this is March, April, May, June?
June.
We'll be on meeting June, I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah, that gives us some time to collect.
Yeah, that would be good. Okay, we'll put that on the agenda. All right, very good, thank you for bringing it up, though.
Sure.
Thank you. Are there any other matters that would come before the committee this evening?
One other quick question, so obviously, we've had three cases of coronavirus in Cuyahoga County. Are there any protocols we're doing any differently for large amounts of people that are coming together and congregating? Any information, public information, are we able to disseminate anything that we're doing to change our, you know, infection control standards, this?
Well, I know that, I just got something from the county, like a couple pages of what they're doing, which I understand tomorrow too, at our staff meeting, Chief Reek is gonna address it with the staff, probably what we should be doing in that sense. Darren's telling me he's gonna be there to do that.
On our custodial end, we did a wiping of door handles, panic bars on the doors, our upstairs weight equipment. Linda did order extra supplies, and believe it or not, we are having some trouble getting.
And there's some cost hikes in.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we are having some issue, not that we're out, but we are trying to get more for, because I think this is the tip of the iceberg, but, you know, we're trying to be proactive in that regards.
What about from a transportation perspective? So we are transporting residents here and there, we have buses, you know. When the Spanish influenza came in 1918, it was because of the trains and taking troops all across the country for World War I that this thing spread all over the world, you know. So just curious, do we do anything like that for our you know, for the transportation, and should we?
Well, we do. Did you, were you gonna say something?
I was. For our chartered buses, we obviously have no control what the driver does in terms of sanitation, but sure. For our drivers, they do keep a kit. We keep Lysol and antibacterial wipes, and they do wipe down the surfaces of the car when they transport in between transports,
that's
the
great.
Door handles and all those things.
I would get that information out. Because I think people are starting to get a little concerned. And we're doing everything right. And thanks to you guys, you're doing everything right. So let's just make sure people know we're doing things right.
Because we had kind of a larger event yesterday, also our staff were armed with the wipes, and actually in the putt-putt section, every time a kid used a club, they were wiping the handles. And the parents did notice, they were very appreciative,
yes,
that they were being very diligent about everything the kids touched, and everything got wiped down between use.
And might we suggest too, that talk to our transportation providers, the bus providers, and just ask them what they're doing, so that we might know that. Because I would like to wager that we're doing something as well, so.
But if we don't ask, we don't, you know.
Right.
And I think another issue that comes up to my mind is when we prepare our food for our residents, we obviously do it in an excellent way in our own kitchens that have no dishwashers. And I will reinforce that is an issue. I know you struggle with that, and we have all these years. And when I don't know how many places that prepare food for the numbers of people that we do will have no dishwashers for all of our pots, our serving trays, our utensils. I mean, I know we throw away disposable,
right,
you know, things that we actually eat on, but I think that's an issue. It legitimately is an issue.
Absolutely.
To be able to better sanitize those things.
That are,
no, we have no room for one.
And we do sanitize the counters and everything.
Know.
that's done every day, but I think that...
I don't question you don't try to do the best of your ability, but I'm saying we don't have what you need in there. You know, so, and I hope when the DPDP, I never still know. The group comes through, that's why I kept saying the group. When they come through, I hope that that's a point that's brought up with them too, as they're looking at what's needed for our area. I mean, we know we want a whole renovation of the kitchen as we were discussing earlier, but that's a critical factor as far as I'm concerned. Critical. And you're always working on your temperatures and your refrigerators and your freezers with the alarms that tell us that the refrigerators have gone off so that we'll know. I mean, those are things that are critical too, and we're, and we do that. But this is a very important thing, sanitation of the equipment you're using and all.
It does highlight the issue that, you know, there are germs and infection control procedures, and we're doing it. Maybe the residents or maybe other guests aren't doing it. So maybe we need to be a little bit educating for them as well. I get appalled at the amount of people who don't wash their hands while they're using the latrine. That is one thing that...
Why they're doing well.
The restrooms.
Oh my gosh, we just talked about that. It shocks me.
Should be like a bayonet in there if you don't do it.
And I mean, I this maybe is going to sound inappropriate, Jim, now you may not like it, but I've been to some restaurants that they will have, you know how you'll see the ones, all staff must wash their hands.
Right.
Okay,
what about the rest of us?
Well, wait a minute. I've been to some that say unwashed hands lead to E. coli and, you know, and all that. People, maybe they don't realize it. I mean, common sense should tell you, but maybe we need more things like that. I've seen that in more public facilities.
I will tell you this. Can I go off the record a minute?
Do you want to end the meeting?
I would move to close the community services second meeting.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?